Hello.
Woo!
We're talking on a podcast. This is the first Dog Playdate podcast of the 2015-2016 Knicks season. It's Saturday. The Knicks are now 4-6 after losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers on Friday night.
And the Charlotte Hornet Bobcats.
The Horcats.
The Horcats off a late Porzingis, on a called off Porzingis three, yeah. That in my heart and the hearts of Knicks fans everywhere is good.
That counted. It's been a frustrating couple of days. It feels like the Knicks could have a above 500 record and
frustrating
two wins.
Frustrating, but also I think there's a lot of positives there.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people since the beginning of the season have been focusing on Derek Fisher. And I have sort of mixed feelings. So I guess my initial question for you, since we haven't talked about this yet, is how are you feeling in general about Derek Fisher, Knicks head coach?
I feel like his gray patch is mesmerizing in his beard. I feel like he's looking more like Suge Knight every day. And I feel like, I think he's improved. I think it was really hard to get a feel for Derek Fisher, the coach, last season because they had a bunch of players that were not NBA players and it was like a house burning down. This season, he's still trying to figure out lineups. Flau's been out until recently. There's some weird lineup stuff and part of that is just, you know, mismatched parts. And then, but then there's stuff like, the play that got a Flalo the shot at the end of the game the other night, and the play that got Porzingis the layup that was a bad pass by Lance Thomas at the rim. So there's like all these things that point to, oh, Derek Fisher has improved in these ways. I mean, improved from the non-score of the season before. Yeah.
I took nothing away from last season.
Right. Yeah. There's,
he was experimenting.
It's impossible to say, like, to get a read on him. This season, there's, you know, the fact that he's not so dogmatic about the triangle and that the team seems more comfortable just in the way it runs. It cycles through its offensive sets.
Right.
So there's reasons to be positive about Derek Fisher. I think he's improved. But at the same time, I think it's... I also do not know yet if he's a good coach.
No, I have no idea. And I think strategically, he doesn't look like a mastermind. He doesn't look super creative.
Right.
Looks fine, though. They run good sideline out-of-bounds plays. They're definitely mixing up the triangle and building the triangle differently than they used to. It's not just rudimentary stuff. You can see the principles almost every time down, but... there's a little bit more rule breaking. There's a little bit more outside shooting. They're looking more for the pick and roll, all this kind of stuff. And obviously a big part of that is that he has basketball players now.
Right.
And like there aren't going to be four guys on the floor who can neither pass nor shoot.
Right.
Ever. Although on that note, I think the main thing that people are grumpy about, if they are grumpy about Fisher, isn't so much play calling stuff as it is rotational stuff.
Well, I agree with that. But I think you could give him somewhat of a pass on that just simply because of, you know, that's still kind of a weird roster. He stuck too long, obviously, with the Calderon Vujicic lineup and then just exiled Vujicic to like the second moon of Mars. So I think part of that is just getting a feel for his players. But I mean, I agree that lineup wise, it's been a little weird.
It's weird, too. He doesn't have favorite guys yet.
Yeah. I mean, he just needs to find...
He just loves everybody.
He just needs to find a lineup, and it's not so easy. I mean,
Do teams ever play, you know, 12-man rotations where guys are, like, all 12 of those guys are actually operating?
It must have... the Spurs must do something like that, right?
Right. Sometimes where the starters are playing, like, 18 minutes a night.
Yeah, I just think it's like he doesn't – and we were talking about this before we pressed record. Like, who is your ideal Knicks clutch time?
Well, let's answer that question. Like, let's say – don't worry about offense, defense. Let's say you got to play both ways on whatever. Who are your, like, five most reliable Knicks players? together that you know make sense as a unit?
Well, you kind of have to have.
Okay. Well, Melo's in there.
Melo's in there. Lopez is there.
Up in the air, yeah, Lopez is definitely there. I'm including Robin Lopez too.
Aflalo if healthy. Right.
Yeah.
And then the choice between Calderon and Galloway is not as simple as it seems, just because ideally Calderon is the best shooter on the team, theoretically.
Right.
And probably in practice.
Right.
Porzingis, I mean.
It's tough.
It's really tough. It's really not tough. Yeah, it's not easy.
Because, so I think people, you know, you would get some votes for Calderon versus Galloway is hard. I think most people would side with Galloway, but Calderon on a long term is probably the better shooter unless he's really fallen off and Galloway has really broken out.
Right.
Passing, I think they're probably closer than one would realize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Galloway is not a point guard, but Calderon is only a point guard in the sense that he doesn't turn the ball over.
he is just
such a coward with the ball. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but like those couple of possessions against the Cavs in the fourth quarter where the Knicks almost had consecutive 24-second violations.
Right.
It was actually Galloway one time and Calderon the other, but where they would run a pick and roll and not force the ball to Melo, and then they just wouldn't make the pass that they presented. Yeah. You know, like basketball is all about creating space for yourself, but then you have to exploit that space, and Calderon is very hesitant to do that.
I mean, on the one hand, the thing about Calderon that everybody talks about, obviously, is that he's lost 15 steps.
Yes.
So
he really can't defend anyone.
Yeah, I understand the guy not wanting to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like he, in terms of floor spacing, guys, you do have to respect him. Galloway is shooting 55% for three, but I think it's kind of.
He's also clutch as hell.
He's really clutch
as hell. He hits all of those down the stretch. Yeah, I think if it were on me, I would, and I'm only playing one point guard because I'm playing Aflalo, I would put Galloway in there, especially if we're calling this, you know, an offense-defense lineup.
Right.
Galloway is clearly the better defender, although a little bit prone to errors and, you know, brain farts in those situations. I think the big question is, do you want Porzingis in there?
You could argue, there's arguments both ways.
Right? Like, do you trust his split-second decision-making? I don't know. It's tough. I guess the main point to take away is that, like, Fisher can't please everyone with that stuff.
Right.
And he can't put out a perfect lineup because the Knicks are in sort of unbalanced and still a deeply lacking team, which we knew going in. You know, everyone expected this to be a 30-something win team. It was clear they didn't have much of a backcourt. It was clear that, you know, there was a combination of incomplete and youthful players up front. Like, it's a half-built team. And so, yeah, when you have to pick a five-man lineup that's, like, as perfect as possible, you're not going to solve everything all at once.
And complicating that is Melo's best position is at the four.
Yeah, and although if you put Porzingis in, that's not really an issue because Porzingis can play like a three. It doesn't matter.
Right. But that's...
On defense, it's complicated.
Right. Should we talk about Porzingis?
You know what I want to do is, because it's going to get really pornographic, is just leave the like heavy Kristaps talk till, let's give it another few minutes before we go all in.
Oh, Kristaps.
Yeah, like my pants are still on right now.
Oh,
and I want to keep them on for another like 15 minutes at least. Fisher, I'm talking about, have those conservative Mike Woodson-y ticks, like the Vujicic thing.
Right.
Like Sasha Vujicic, who is not good enough to play in their normal rotation, which he has clearly been projecting, Fisher has been projecting, and you know, anyone would agree with. The guy who's not good enough to play in the normal rotation, when one person, Aaron Aflalo, was out, he was a starter in 18-minute per game play.
And now he's just gone.
He's just gone. So I don't, you know, if he's not worth 10 minutes when everyone's healthy, which is the case, he's not worth any minutes, then why is he playing?
Well, I mean, I think some of that is just like is the personality management part of coaching. Mm-hmm. It's like we always want, oh man, just bench this fucking dude.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like you you do run the risk of killing your locker room if you just coldly bench certain guys who are not producing. Like,
right.
Like Calderon has to play.
Yeah.
You can't, like, he's got to play. Certain guys just, you have to give them a little leash. And I think, obviously he gave Vujicic too much leash. Obviously you playing Vujicic and Calderon together was not ideal. But at the same time, I can, from the point of view of, I'm going to give these veteran guys a shot and not, you know, immediately poison my locker room, I can understand it.
That, but then the other thing is the shot came with him and Calderon almost exclusively playing together, which is just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
It, you know, it let, like, John Wall and Jeff Teague kill them. It got Kristaps and Robin Lopez in foul trouble a bunch. It's tough. And, you know, that's one of his little habits that will continue to bug me. I don't really get it. The rotation stuff is hard. And so I'm looking at the Cleveland box score. They had 10 guys played at least 15 minutes. Kylo Quinn played 3 and got 2 fouls in 3 minutes and just didn't come back. I mean, and Figuero Quinn usually plays more minutes on a normal night. Vujicic and Kevin Serafin are out of the rotation, tentatively. Out of the remaining 11 guys, like, who are you just subtracting? You know, who are you just going to knock out of that rotation? Like, Lou Amundsen has been pretty solid when he's played.
Lou Amundsen's been a garbage
Derek
man.
Derek Williams has not really hit shots, but, like, he pushes pace, he gets free throws. He's defended a little better than you would think he would. Lance Thomas is, like, very fine.
He's been very solidly Lance Thomas-y. Yeah. He's been more Lance Thomas-y than you would have expected. He's hitting shots, and he's defending on the wing. He's, you know, he's Lance Thomas.
So I'm not positive. I mean, I guess you probably make a decision between Amundsen and O'Quinn. Like, which of these guys am I going to give minutes?
Certainly, you would hope they limit Amundsen and Thomas together.
Yeah, that was the thing Fisher did down the stretch against the Cavs.
Yeah.
That even defensively, I don't really think they make such a difference on defense that you shouldn't replace one of those guys with Kristaps.
Right. Kristaps.
No, we're not there yet.
Kristaps.
We're not there yet. Keep your clothes on. Give it 5 to 10 more minutes.
Carmelo Anthony?
Melo looks like Melo. You know, we've had the luxury, I guess, kind of. I don't know if I should call it a luxury, of seeing Melo, like, come off of a sort of dead off season before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not quite the same magnitude of surgery, but we've seen him bounce back from a knee thing. And this is what he looks like.
Yeah. He's starting to come on a little bit. It still seems like he might not have all of his lift.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe this is just what he looks like now.
He's shooting, you know, dude usually is like 55 to 60% around the rim from 0 to 3 feet. On BREF, he is 42% from 0 to 3 feet away from the rim.
Yeah, he's the second league leader in isolation plays behind James Harden and in front of LeBron. But
he's getting buckets.
He's getting, you know, over 1 point per possession in that.
He's also very much in the...
I don't hate that, but I don't love it. Yeah. But at the same time, that's who he is.
Yeah, he's very much in that rhythm where, like, just using the Cleveland game as an example, he spent the entire second quarter, he would use screens and handoffs from Lopez.
Yep.
He would either kill someone one-on-one or he would draw help and just make a beautiful pass out of help.
His floor game, by and large, this season has been really impressive. He's been swinging the ball, rebounding, and just...
And part of that is just, like, he has guys to pass to.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, like...
Yes. Whatever. And just in, like, two games, you can tell that there's a comfort level with, like, a Flalo.
Yeah.
Like, especially.
Yeah. Which is nice, because he's a pretty reliable player. Flalo. I've liked him so far. Like, I really didn't feel good about him, but... And he's not a plus defender. Not a terrific passer, but he handles the ball better than I thought.
And he's a bully.
He goes after every fucking mismatch. Yeah. If a guy is even a millimeter shorter than him, he's going down to the post.
Which is kind of the thing, like, in today's NBA that you would think you're going to see more of. Like, as you see more switching defenses and mm-hmm. smaller guys guarding bigger guys, that kind of skill set you would think would become more valuable.
Yeah, time. For sure. And I like Aflalo. Even for a guy who's probably in, you know, 60% conditioning right now, he looks fine.
And in the late stages of his
leg career.
Yeah.
One thing that's nice, not true of the Cleveland game, but nice overall, and that Fisher I think has done well but not gotten credit for, is he's managing Melo's minutes pretty nicely.
Yes.
Melo's at like what, 33 a night?
Mm-hmm. I would say the same for Kristaps.
For Kristaps, too.
Yeah.
That's actually another thing that Fisher doesn't get. You know, Fisher could easily be, especially because the Knicks are deep up front.
Right.
He could easily be bringing Kristaps off the bench, never using him down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, really keeping him under 20 minutes. That would be a very, like, nervous,
right.
You know, conservative coach thing to do. But he's not, really relying on him.
He's not. Kristaps has been, with the exception of the Bobcats game where he kind of offense-defensed him.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really understand why he brought him back. I didn't mind him not being out there, like, matchup wise, but he's really been, he's stuck to a steady rotation with him,
mm-hmm.
and he's been out there at important minutes, moments of the game.
Yep.
I noticed that we didn't mention Kevin Serafin at all.
Kevin Serafin's pretty bad.
Yeah. Kevin Serafin.
You know, whatever. Like, it's clear what he does, and the things that he does, he doesn't do well.
He's enough. Like, Jason Smithy, but
he's a little bit Jason Smithy. Yeah, I mean, he like eats the ball when he has it.
Yes,
and on defense,
he eats a lot of things. I think. I think he's a fan of eating.
Yeah, he's like an active defender without being a smart defender.
Yeah,
you know, if he happens to be in the right place, he's gonna get that block. But I wish Kylo Quinn was playing better. I really love him, and it's becoming increasingly clear why he's had trouble like keeping regular minutes.
Well, I think the thing with O'Quinn is when he tries to overstep what it is he's really good at, which is just doing a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
When he tries to take on too much of the offense, okay. You know, he's a limited player in this, but physically, athletically, but he's really smart when he swings the ball, and when you throw it to him, like guys cut off him, he can pass the ball and he can score a little bit.
Yeah.
It's when all of that stuff gets out of balance, like when he tries to go get a rebound and go right up with it, and he's not athletic enough to like jump over dudes, really? You know, like,
yeah.
And that's when you're like, oh, okay, just throw it out.
He has a little bit of a,
like, you shouldn't be taking step backs on.
Yes. He has a little bit of a point center complex where if you want to, you know, hold the ball in the post and make a read, that's awesome. If you want to swing pass, that's awesome.
Right.
I don't need you like dribbling around and trying to make every play.
And I think that's been the problem with him.
Yeah. I think he and Jaren Grant actually have a little bit of a thing in common where if the game is moving fast, if they're forcing misses and pushing up the floor, they're both just deadly weapons.
Yeah.
Because O'Quinn is such a gifted outlet passer, and Grant is so good off the off the dribble and on the move. If the Knicks are playing at a fast pace like they were in their first couple games, those guys are really useful on offense. As soon as things slow down, I think O'Quinn is going to get better as he gets used to the triangle, and Grant too, but they both are pretty mistake prone right now.
Yeah. And part of the thing with Grant too is he just burns so much energy when he's out there. Like you can see when he gets tired, he gets really tired. And teams have, I think, taking his measure, they understand that he wants to run at guys, and good defensive teams can pretty much snuff out. Like, he had a lot of plays where he would kind of dribble at guys, have nothing, have to throw it out, reset, dribble, run at a guy, have it get snuffed out.
He gets 6 feet of space every time he has
the ball. And he's, you know, he's not going to pull up.
Yeah.
And teams know that.
And he's a very creative passer on the move and accurate and stuff, and he's good with the hesitation and the changes of pace, but standing still, in a normal triangle set, he's telegraphing everything.
It's going to take some time for that kind of stuff, for the more organized parts of the game.
Yeah. I feel better about him than I did in Summer League, though. I think that those parts of his game, you know, he's 22 or 23 already, so it's not like he has a ton to improve, but that kind of stuff can come along.
Yeah, because he looked kind of like, at times, like almost a garbage fire in Summer League in terms of like...
He did.
Yeah.
If they weren't running pick and roll, if they weren't running in transition, he looked awful.
Yeah. And he's looked markedly better than that, although that's still a weakness of his game. Yeah.
But he can get to the rim in a half-court set now and then. And he's smart.
Yeah.
He's a little flaky and a little bit his like...
Which is fine.
Instincts aren't perfect.
He is a rookie.
But he is generally intelligent. He is a rookie, even though he's like older than I am somehow. but I do like him. And again, I'm glad like part of it is that the Knicks have no guards, but he's playing. Fisher's really giving him real minutes.
Yep.
He's part of this rotation.
Yep.
And... it is reassuring that Fisher is not one of those coaches who just systematically hates rookies.
Right.
Because he's got a couple really useful ones. We haven't talked much about Derek Williams.
Derek Williams has kind of regressed to is who we thought he was, but better. I mean...
he deserves minutes.
He deserves
which
minutes.
Which is better than I thought he would be.
He deserves minutes because they need... this is a team that really needs like athleticism and dynamic play, and he can provide that in spurts. Like he's great when he's going to the basket. He's good. He's cuts reasonably well, like intelligently, and he's not been a total trash fire on defense.
He has his moments on defense.
Yeah, I mean, like they need a guy. They need activity. And he provides. He's been for any of the mistakes and the rough edges that he's had, and the mistakes that he's made, he's kind of made up for them just by being energetic.
Yeah, for a guy who isn't like a standstill, stiff big man,
right?
He's one of the worst ball handlers I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah,
he's like pretty solid as a finisher. If he's trying to create anything, you know, if he's doing anything himself on the move, it's not going to go well.
Right, which. He's at his best when he like when a guy loses sight of him and he cuts either backdoor or on the break gets something.
And really, no matter how many minutes he gets four or five free throws.
Right.
He always gets the line. And that's really useful because the team doesn't have a lot of that. It's that him and Grant have that in common, actually, that they're both going to get to the stripe. And that's nice. It'd be nice to see. I mean, they've just had a tough schedule and played some really good defenses already.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see them get the pace back up a little bit just so they're like somewhat middle of the road, because they went from being like holy shit through three or four games the Knicks are one of the fastest teams in the league
and now they're
22nd,
right? And then they I think,
which is probably around where they're gonna be. It would be nice if they're closer to average, and that may come, you know, in mid-December once they've played some shittier teams and flakier defenses. But I don't know. Circling back, like, there's a lot of guys who you can make a case for deserving minutes, and it's tough to window down their rotation. And it's tough to turn. It's tough to turn 14 to 10, and it's tough to turn 10 or whatever to 5 at this point.
And it's a big, heavy. I mean, it's, you know, there's a glut of.
It's a top heavy. Yeah.
There's a glut of big dudes, all of whom do something.
Yeah. Except within that. Within that glut, it's a glut of, like, defense-first guys, weirdly.
Yeah.
You know? Lance and Lou are, like, both reliable guys on defense, but, you know, how much do you want to commit to that? I don't know. It's tough. Okay.
Should we talk about...
It's Kristaps. Pants are coming off. I'm undoing my belt.
Oh, Kristaps.
Lubing up. let's start by each saying something negative about Kristaps Porzingis.
He had cornrows.
That's not negative. That's not negative. That's the most
when
positive.
When he was 13.
That's most positive.
Negative about Chris, he could be more aggressive with his shot. He's open a lot more than he shoots it.
Sure.
And
he has a heavy conscience.
Yeah, I think he's, you could tell he knows that he's not shooting well. And if he doesn't hit his first one, he's unlikely to take his second, third, fourth, you know, wide open attempts or open for a 7'3". So open for him attempt.
Yeah, and that's a problem, by the way, you know, if you're playing him in crunch time. It's like the thing I was talking about with Calderon.
Exactly.
He does the same thing where it's like they run their play, they got the look they wanted, and he stares down the basket. He's like, nah.
Although
– and then you just wasted 12 seconds.
The thing that I loved about that Bobcat shot that didn't count was that he called – he was like, I'm going to call my own number. It was supposedly a play for Melo.
Right, but Zeller right. sagged way off of him, and Kristaps is like, this lob isn't going to work. I need to pop out.
Right, and so...
And he was right.
That is heartening. That is one of the heartening things about Kristaps. What do you not like about Kristaps Porzingis?
You took my thing.
What, that he's not aggressive enough?
You took my thing. I guess he's... already proven to be a really active, really good rebounder. However, his post-rebound decision-making on mm-hmm. offense isn't great. You know, he goes up not really knowing what he wants to do. He just kind of flails, like half trying to draw a foul. Yeah. Half.
I mean, that was always going to be...
That's a strength thing.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, I guess a backing up a little bit, like he's not hitting his shots. He's not hitting outside shots.
Which I'm not. I'm not that worried. But he's got a PER of 16. It was
well. That's the other shit. But just like ignoring the other shit for a second, the fact that he's pulling down tons of rebounds.
Yeah, I mean his numbers for the fact that his shot isn't falling is that's right. the thing.
But even like you want a shot to fall, and so my suspicion, and this is you know it helps to look at the numbers of someone like Dirk Nowitzki, is that he wasn't shooting NBA threes in Europe. He's got a weak lower body. His conditioning is, you know, not at an NBA player level yet.
He shot 20%. Dirk shot 20% on threes his rookie year.
Which is around where Kristaps is right now.
Right. Kristaps is a little better, 21%.
And so I'm inclined to – actually, we talked about this earlier, like, not to compare every European player to him, but Danilo Gallinari is a guy who came to the Knicks and it was like, all right, this guy is a lights-out shooter, nothing else right. going for him. And in fact, he's an okay shooter. He's fine.
Not a great shooter, but a good...
He'll take the shots, but a good defender, like good with the ball in his hands, right. like good at all the things you didn't expect and bad at shooting. I don't think Kristaps is headed down that road.
Well, and this is partly another thing we were talking about beforehand is that Kristaps is the opposite player of what he was touted as in June. He was supposed to be a offense-heavy, sweet-shooting, stretch guy who's going to struggle on defense and probably not be a good rebounder.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wait, he is a really aggressive at pursuing the ball. He's really active screen setter, which is like the underrated part of his game.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not – his shot just isn't falling right now. He's like – he is just not the player that people said he was. Like he's a good defender. He's aggressive. He knows how to use his length really well. And even when he's getting beat by guys, he gets beat in such a way that he makes them take an angle where he can still reach that like giant willowy stretch arm, you know, out and drape it over like the guy and alter the shot. Like he's altered a lot of shots and his length. You can see his length is in dudes' heads when they see it. They, you know, when they face up against him, like, oh wow, this guy is really huge.
He was very much stereotyped, and I totally bought into it because I only watched a little bit of him, and it seemed like he did sort of fit that classic like giant Euro guy who shoots jumpers. And
I would say the one thing,
do anything else.
The one thing that was dead on is like he is going to struggle at the rim, and he's going to do that for a while unless it's tip dunks where guys aren't looking and he can catch them.
Those are fun.
but in terms of finishing in traffic, you know, taking a guy one-on-one and finishing, that's going to be a little while before that happens.
Sure. He's got really good timing and hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
That's part of the defense and the tip dunking and rebounding stuff is he can move his feet fine. But he's pretty solid at just staying straight up, not swinging his arms at people. Like for a guy who has statistically been very foul prone through 10 games, he's not actually a hacker.
And well, here's the other thing about like the foul prone. You know, with guard with skill positions with like young guards, there's a lot of studies out there that say high turnovers. You don't like Moutier. You don't care about that because it shows that they're seeing something that they just haven't been able to do yet.
Right.
With Kristaps, the fouls, he obviously needs to rein him in, and he's the refs are going to eventually, you know, become acclimated to the way he plays, and he's going to, and vice versa. But also, you just love the fact that he is this aggressive. Like, he's challenging aggressive, guys.
And just anecdotally, his fouls aren't – there's a couple stupid little, like, a push foul and a rebound or, moving screen or something.
Right.
But in terms of someone driving at him and, you know, him trying to protect the rim, he's not – like, someone like O'Quinn or Serafin still has a habit of just trying to take a bite out of a guy's arm.
Yeah.
And he's mostly just going up and trying to wall off the rim. And he sometimes guys run into his chest, and that happens. But he really does have the coordination and the timing and the discipline to just go up and try to block the shot and not go for a home run play.
He is foul. Like, if you want to compare him to, like, people always compare him to Dirk. The per 36 numbers are, and some of the shooting numbers.
On defense, that's just not
it's
useful.
Not, yeah, comparison. It's not the same. And then if you want to. Just as a measure of aggressiveness, Dirk had 105 personal fouls in his first year. That's like through the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Kristaps has 35 already.
He also, in terms of things that he may never be, I don't know if he's going to be a passer. I don't know if he either.
I don't think he's going to be an assist man, but he passes the ball. I mean, he's kind of like Calderon-ish in that way, you know, like
where he just makes easy passes.
Yes, yeah. He's a willing passer. I don't think you're ever going to see him average 4 assists a game.
Well, and he has not yet shown, and I wouldn't expect him to, the Robin Lopez level of passing where you can give him the ball on the high post and just screen guys and circle around him, and he's got the, you know, the handoff timing.
Right.
He may develop that. He doesn't have that yet. Lopez is really good at that.
Yeah. Lopez, I would say it's almost like he looks for the pass too much, I would say.
Yeah, he'll kind of
holds it a little bit too much. But yes, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
What else what do you love about Kristaps?
What do you love about music?
Kristaps.
I like that he can shoot on the move.
Yeah, I mean,
that's only been coming out in fits and starts.
He does one of those a game, though, where he like will either juke a guy or kind of not pump fake, but kind of square up like he's going to then go, show and go real quick.
Yeah, he's got some guard-like habits where he can curl around a screen.
He had a post-up move where he back down drop step and then did a sky hook.
Yeah.
Last game.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, okay, do that every time.
So you have that. That's really the fun part of – actually, Eric Corian wrote a really good thing about Jonas Valanciunas' first year. Which is kind of discouraging in a way because Jonas Valanciunas is merely okay. Like, he's a good player. Anyway, but about the experience of watching a relatively unknown rookie in his first 20 to 50 games where it's like each night it's like, oh, wow, okay, he's got that. I didn't know he had that shot. And every night there are two or three new things that you just didn't know he had in the quiver and are really impressive.
Yeah. I would say the thing that makes me excited – over everything about Kristaps and is different than a lot of like Valanciunas or a lot of kind of like the stretchy like new NBA big man skilled dudes is that he's just got like a really high motor for dirty work stuff.
Yeah.
Like he sprints into screens. And he does it over and over, like, over again, where you're, like, eventually – I mean, it's like we talk about how skinny he is. Like, he's overmatched physically all the time. And it doesn't ever seem to get to him that he gets pushed around.
Yeah.
You know, he just keeps coming. He keeps going. And it's really – that over everything is the thing – that has me excited about Kristaps. Like he just
it's almost
doesn't
to the
stop
point.
Playing hard and doing these little things that normally like you like normally a guy would just stop setting screens.
Yeah.
Like or would do like the slip screen thing. He like runs into screens and like really sets them.
Yeah. It's almost to the point where I wonder if, like, when he's a veteran, he's a little more jaded. And he does have his shot. He's like, all right, I don't need to do this rebounding and defending shit anymore. But the instincts are all there. And
you know, like...
It's amazing that at his stage, he is a useful, efficient, like, productive two-way player. The Knicks are better with him on the floor.
You can make...
On both ends.
You can make... I don't make this argument, but you could make the numbers argument that per minutes wise, he's like their best player. I don't make that argument, but you could make that
not
argument.
Saying this.
I'm not saying
but
that.
But someone could say that.
You could, but yeah, someone could say that. I would say, would you say he's their –
He's top three or four.
I think he's their second best player.
That's not ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. I know it's like – it's a very small sample size. I think he's their second
and
best
again,
player.
He's top three or four without having any idea what his role is.
Yes, on offense. Exactly.
He has no real – I mean, he manages to get a few buckets each game anyway, but he has no real clue what he's supposed to be doing. And the Knicks don't really know how to use him yet.
They don't
and
know.
And yet,
he's
fine.
His – I mean, his usage rate
– What is his usage rate?
It's 20 – I'm curious about that. Just a shade under 24. I don't – that is not indicative of how kind of little – they call his number. I mean, it's kind of increased over the last few games.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is the tip dunks and the offensive rebounding is kind of skewing that. But at the same time, like, he's getting all his numbers off garbage, like off of just hustle stuff.
Yeah. Less and less.
Less and less.
But generally, it's like broken plays where he's there for the kick out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The offensive rebounds, stuff in transition. I really feel like I'm being reasonable about it, and simultaneously I'm just like drooling.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
I spend every off day they have, I just watch Kristaps highlights.
He's like unquestionably their best draft pick since Ewing, right?
Yeah, I had this conversation the other day. The only person who I think is in contention and I would shoot down is Mark Jackson. Who won Rookie of the Year, but was like 22 or whatever,
right. and was like a limited. He was a great. He was always very slow, a very good passer, limited defender.
And that was a better team he was walking on, too,
right?
Also.
But isn't Chris like if you're just gonna go like, okay, who would you want? Like,
oh yeah, and also like the learning curve for big men is usually much steeper,
right?
And he's on a similar level, so whatever. I love him. I love him so much. I'm so excited about him. And it makes me happy and it's heartening that I think he and Melo really, they don't quite have a two-man game. Like, they've run pick and roll for each other like three times all season.
You'd
and
like
it's,
to see
it's
it
worked
more.
Well.
Yeah.
But they trust each other and I think are getting along.
Well, we said this like in the preseason. I think we talked about this, but it's like indicative of everything that's been fucked up about the Knicks over the past 10 years that within, I would say, the first 10 minutes of like Kristaps' first preseason game or the first game that he played with Melo, you know, we were like, oh, the spacing already looks better than it ever did between Amari and Melo. Like, it already looked like they can play together.
Yeah.
And that's just like that kind of sums up the Knicks.
Yeah.
Like, because they really, I mean, they can really play together. And just the way that Kristaps, like, the way he moves on the court to spaces where he should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're never like, Kristaps, why are you there?
Yeah. Even for a guy who, like, clearly doesn't get the triangle fully yet.
Yes.
And, like, doesn't really know what he should be doing. He manages to not be in the way.
Yeah, I mean, even in help defense, which is it's not always great. Help defense is like one of the trickiest things to learn in the league. Some veteran guys never get it. And even if he messes up, in a way that's like.
He and Robin Lopez make a nice little tandem.
Yes. I mean, like, how long until. Now we're just getting crazy. How long until he's their best player? Like, assuming, like, Melo stays here for the life of his deal. When is Kristaps Porzingis the Knicks' best player unquestionably? Next year?
I feel comfortable assuming that, like, he's going to progress. Like, the shot's going to come.
Right. The shots will fall.
He's going to get stronger. Like, my read on him is he has a good work ethic, that he knows what he needs to develop, that he's intelligent, all these things. I've been wrong about that before.
But. By the way, like, when I was there when he got drafted. I saw him come down the hallway before he went to the press room. He came down the hallway and he very, like, dramatically took out a cell, like, someone handed him a cell phone, and it was like either his agent or whoever it was, like, you know, they had just booed him, and he, like, was clearly talking about that. He was like, no, you know, I'm not concerned about that. I'm very excited. Like, I'm going to show everybody. And a part of me was like, and he'd been saying stuff like that the whole time. Like, I'm not the same Euro guy that you've seen. And part of me was like, oh, you know, this guy is obviously just very well drilled. He's got a great team. Good agent. Yeah. His team, like, knows what to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, he's really been showing that.
Yeah, he might really get it.
He might really be this guy.
His post-game quotes are always, like, so deliciously on point, you know?
Yeah.
And just the stuff he says after practice, it's like, yeah, you really know what you need to be working on. You understand what you did wrong.
And it's super early.
He gets it.
It's super early, but it's very, very exciting. Like,
So to answer the when is he the best player question, I don't think it's ridiculous to guess that within 2 or 3 years,
right,
he's the best player. And without naming names, I had someone in my ear yesterday being like, why is he not an all-star next year?
In the East, at forward, like...
Well, maybe he's playing five, I don't know.
I think that's the thing.
I don't care what you call it. Like,
right.
You could argue he's the five right now. I mean, he tends to guard the smaller player, and Lopez, but it's just not particularly important whether he's a four or five.
Where does he end up, like, for the bulk of his career? I think it's smart that they're not playing him at five very much slash at all.
I don't see much distinction. You mean so he's guarding Kevin Love, and eventually is that the only difference?
Yeah, I guess.
Because on offense, like...
Well, because, like, he'd be the big guy. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be the big guy. Do you see him as that guy? Like, where it's Kristaps. Kristaps is the quote-unquote big man.
Yes.
Right? I think...
Well, and I'm imagining a near future with Robin Lopez, who's under contract for a while. And who's never going to be the big guy. He's just there.
It's exciting. I think we're all excited about it.
I'm really excited.
And I think the Knicks, I've never been more confident that the Knicks actually understand that they shouldn't trade this guy.
If the Knicks trade Kristaps, I'm going to fucking kill myself.
I would seriously burn down the fucking garden. I would fucking put a rag in a fucking vodka bottle and light it on fire and throw it at the fucking
garden. I would just pull my teeth out one by one.
I would,
and just cry the whole time.
I would seriously go there and just chain myself
to the wheel. And obviously people are already like, well, you know, the Kings aren't doing well. Bogey for Kristaps.
No.
And part of that, I'd like to think that there's some logic in that. But also, as a fan, this is the first time the Knicks have maybe had...
I'm not committing to this, but have maybe had
a superstar that they just drafted. It's possible.
And first time in a long time.
I really want the Knicks to have a, like, career-long Nick guy that they scouted and drafted and developed and, you know, followed just a natural trajectory that guys are supposed to follow. They have not had that since Ewing.
Also, let's...
might be that.
I think that just the fact that he's educating, like, a whole class of New York sports fan about the per 36 stat.
So many people are like, dude, he's got like 18 rebounds.
He's per 36. Nobody has ever talked about per 36 before.
Yeah.
Like, that has not ever been talked about, like, on the radio or on television in New York. Now it's like, let's take a look at Kristaps Porzingis' per 36 number. When you put his number, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know. By the way, Mike Sweetney had good per 36 numbers.
Mike Sweetney was a solid rookie.
He really was.
This is who we're comparing.
His per 36 rebounding numbers were solid. I wanted him to get more minutes.
The Knicks do have a long history, long recent history of like pretty solid rookies. You know,
yes.
Channing Frye was fine.
Yeah.
Landry Fields was good.
Wilson Chandler was
fine.
Yeah,
Wilson Chandler was okay. Trevor Ariza was okay.
But this is like, could possibly be.
None of the, all of those guys, and Shump is in this, is in this group too. All those guys were like, okay, he could be a player someday. Like,
right,
he's kind of hurting them when he's on
player,
the floor.
Right.
But you can see where it's, Kristaps has the same thing where it's like, clearly he's got a ways to go, but he's already helping. He's already one of the
better
players.
Gallo was the one guy where I thought, if a bunch of forwards get old / injured and he has like a great season, I could see him making one, maybe two all-star teams. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That's still a possibility for him, but the injuries have been such a massive problem.
Whereas like Porzingis,
To stay healthy. Let's like knock on some wood for a little bit. The neck thing was pretty crazy.
He bounced back from
like,
that.
He broke his fucking spine in half and he was like, yeah, I'm fine.
Because
that looked terrible.
It looked real bad. And he looked like...
And that just totally blew over. He's had no lasting symptoms from
that
at all.
He's got that young 20-year-old milky Latvian tissue. Oh, Kristaps.
Fresh Baltic
fresh
meat.
Young Baltic milky white neck sinew.
All right, are we ready to call it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, good podcast.
Wait, they have the Pelicans, the worst.
Pelicans on Sunday.
Are the Pelicans still the worst defensive team in the league? I think they might be. I haven't checked.
Let's look real quick.
Yeah.
I would love for the Knicks.
The
to play
shockingly
the worst
shitty Pelicans.
Teams in the league. The worst defense in the league is indeed the Pelicans by like
amazing
a full 2 points per 36 minutes. Sorry,
worse than the Sixers, which is like
impressive.
It's fucking impressive.
The Knicks. You know, it's going to be a noon game. After a Saturday night off, and that's always dangerous. We
always
saw
dangerous.
Them play the Lakers under those conditions and like narrowly beat them. They really need to just put a whooping on the Pelicans. That would be really nice.
The shockingly
they should.
Shitty Pelicans. That's
I mean, they're so hurt.
Also, well, also like, and this is like a topic for another day maybe, but I think the Pelicans' struggles kind of highlight how incredible what Kerr did last season was, which is take a group of guys who really, by and large, loved their old coach and win them over, like, where they just bought in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you would say from day one, whereas it's kind of the same thing here. You know, Gentry's coming in. Everybody, you know, they really loved Monty.
Yeah.
That team loved Monty. And it's a – like, I don't know if it's – they don't trust – Alvin yet, or they're not buying in, but it's like not, this is like a surprisingly bad start.
Yep. And the Knicks, they gotta fucking win that game. The rest of November is pretty tough.
Yeah.
December gets really easy at the beginning, but like
if they,
Joe Flynn was pointing out to me this morning that last year, you know, they were actually doing a lot of this, obviously it was qualitatively different, but like they were losing a lot of games by 3 or 4 points, playing good teams and keeping close with them, but losing. And those start to pile up. You know, the like moral victories start to get to the point
like,
where,
oh,
shit, you're
3-10. Yeah, we're playing pretty good, but oh, wait.
Yeah. So
I'm not expecting
this team to be a winning team or a great team, but it would be really nice if they remain competitive and don't dig themselves a deep hole just because, like, they're – young and inexperienced and don't know each other.
The number I've said like on a couple other podcasts that if everything breaks completely right, everybody stays healthy, guys like each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, 37-ish wins.
Sure.
And
that's
plausible. Yeah, I think that's plausible.
They're really hitting the meat of their schedule this first month and they're doing okay.
Yeah, if they win mid-30s and above, that's a good season, I think, for this
team. I think so too. I think so too, and I think still reason to believe in that.
Yep.
You know, an eighth of the way in the season.
Kristaps.
All right, let's do this again soon. Good podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Love you.